The history of math is our intellectual foundation to understanding science. Science. Beautiful, awesome, wonderful science. It's the creative foundation to our ineffable future. Hi, I'm Gabrielle Burchak, and this is my podcast, Math, Science, History.
In the year 415, the infamous philosopher and mathematician Hypatia of Alexandria, Egypt, was savagely murdered by church monks. This murder shocked the Roman community and its government leaders. Hypatia was known far and wide as a respected philosopher, mathematician, government advisor, and a professor. Hypatia, The Sum of Her Life, is a book that I wrote that looks not just at the circumstances surrounding her death, but also at the sum of her entire life. I weave in the details of her education, disciples, Neoplatonic philosophies, female contemporaries, and the many mathematics that she wrote and taught about. There is truly more to Hypatia's life than her death. Hypatia, The Sum of Her Life, written by me, Gabrielle Burchak, is now on sale on Amazon. Buy your copy today.
There are often many misconceptions about things that happen in history. Some of these misconceptions have even been stated as fact and cited as such by quote-unquote experts. Someone will cite a source on Wikipedia that is either not accurate or misconstrued. And then when you dig deeper and deeper, you actually can't find the source of information on those misconceptions. As a result, that citation becomes the citation of all truth. Some of these misconceptions in history include stories that people from medieval times believed that the earth was flat, or that Benjamin Franklin discovered electricity, or that Napoleon Bonaparte was short, or that Roman vomitoriums were used for vomiting. The truth is, even in medieval times, people knew that the earth was round. Benjamin Franklin experimented with electricity. Napoleon Bonaparte was 5'6", and the Roman vomitoriums were the entrances and exits to stadiums and theaters. However, history is not the only place where common misconceptions lie. The world of math is full of fallacies that ultimately hinder our mathematical abilities. I have said it numerous times, and I will say it again. Everybody is a mathematician, and we all have mathematical brains. Sadly, many people let those misconceptions become unconscious beliefs, which eventually become their truths. However, these fallacies do not have to be our truths. So, I'm going to dispel my top 5 common misconceptions about mathematics. Misconception number 1. Math people can do math in their heads with rapid speed. The only reason why this delusion is valid is that mathematicians do math all of the time. As a result, for lengthy problems, they break it down into smaller problems. These smaller portions are then solvable. For example, every time I'm at dinner or lunch with friends, I'm always asked to figure out the tip, which most people calculate to 15%. So, if our bill came to $49.27, I would first round it up to $50. Then I would calculate 10% of $50, which is $5. Then I would take that 10% value of $5 and then divide that by 2, which is $2.50. So, $5 plus $2.50 is $7.50. See, I just broke the problem down to solve it quickly. And you can do the same. You can apply the same process in calculus, discrete math, physics, chemistry, and any other subject. When math people are presented with math that they cannot solve in large amounts, they break it down. Then the process goes faster because they can quickly do the simple math. When you know it, you can solve it faster. A perfect example of this is music. Pick a song that you know. You can sing it really fast because you know the lyrics and have probably sung that song a million times. So start with a little math and work your way up to the big math, and you will find that you will be able to do math quickly too. So, to recap misconception number 1, anybody can do rapid math in their heads, it just takes practice. Misconception number 2, some people have a mind for math. If you have been listening to my podcast, you have heard me say that our ancestors had been doing math without calculators for thousands of years. Math-mindedness is in our DNA, and it is part of who we are. Our ancient ancestors were doing the math to determine the sizes and shapes of buildings and bridges, analyze the amount of land that they needed for mass crops, and calculate the amount of money necessary to buy cattle or sheep. They were mathematicians long before the term mathematician was first used, around 1500. We all have a mind for math, and we need to engage with math. To turn a blind eye to math is to let this pretense control your self-confidence. Additionally, the brain is not geared to be stronger on one side or the other. There is this belief that those who are analytical and logical are left-brained, and those who are creative and intuitive are right-brained. This concept, however, is a myth. Unless your brain has suffered an unfortunate head injury, it is more likely that your mind is healthy in its entirety. You are whole-brained. In an interview with NPR's Tanaya Lombroso, Dr. Kara Fettemeyer, a professor of psychology affiliated with the Neurosciences Program and the Beckman Institute for Advanced Science, explains that there is research that shows that math processing engages a hemisphere of the brain called the intraparietal sulcus, which happens to exist on both sides of the brain. It is true that the left side of the brain allows for memorizing verbal information, thus making it easier to recite things like multiplication tables. It is also true that the right side of the brain allows for estimation of quantities. However, in most individuals, both of these hemispheres are equally strong. People are not left-brained or right-brained. So, to recap, misconception number two, no brain is uniquely designed for math. We all have a mind for math. I'm going to repeat this again and again. We all have a mind for math. Misconception number three, some people cannot overcome math anxiety. Let's talk about anxieties. I have a horrible anxiety when it comes to spiders. If I know that there is a spider in the garage, I will run to the other side of the house screaming. I love snakes and I love lizards. However, I get so much anxiety when it comes to spiders that I have a panic attack and my legs go weak. According to Stanford University professor Joe Bowler, the anxiety that many people have when seeing spiders is the same anxiety people have when it comes to taking math tests. The anxiety is real. However, like my belief that a spider will crawl inside my ear in the middle of the night, the assumptions behind math anxiety are not real. Hippocrates first wrote about anxiety in 400 BCE. He described a man named Nicanor, who was gripped with anxiety every time he went to an evening drinking party and heard the flute girl play her music. Nicanor was fine when he heard the music during the day, but at night, the music gripped him with, quote, masses of terrors, unquote. The concept of math anxiety was popularized around 1957 when the Journal of Educational Psychology published a study that determined that people with, quote, number anxiety did poorly on tests. Since then, math anxiety has been a topic for discussion. So where does this anxiety come from? The mental conditioning of students often comes from parents and teachers who express their own math anxiety. This anxiety leads to an emotional response, which results in lower test scores. So, how do we combat math anxiety? We do it in the same way we combat any other anxiety. We recondition the brain. For myself, I am committed to finding something beautiful in spiders. I am attempting to retrain my brain to see spiders as cute as I see my dog. Math is the same way. Parents can approach math with their kids with a can-do attitude when they solve the problems together. Teachers, likewise, can change the narrative and teach their students that solving math is not about the grade, it is about the discovery of math. Additionally, either the teacher or the parent or even the student can put a reward system in place. Taking a math test, regardless of the outcome, can result in a reward of some kind that might involve a shopping trip, a favorite dinner, or a movie. When there is a consistent reward, the brain associates the efforts to approaching math as a positive experience. Also, self-talk is everything. Instead of letting our students say, "I can't do this," teach them to trust their own intellect. Instead of letting them say, "I am really good at math," Remind them that they are getting better and they are on the right track of getting really good at math. Instead of saying, "This is too hard," teach them that it will not be challenging if they take the effort and the time to tackle each problem. Instead of saying, "I made a mistake on this problem, I suck," remind them that the best thing about mistakes is that we can learn from them. So, to recap number 3, math anxiety can be tackled and diminished with the right mindset. As for myself, I am ready to hold a tarantula. So, when the pandemic is over, I will be posting pictures on the Instagram. So, stay tuned. Misconception number 4. There is only one method for solving math problems. This belief is so wrong. There are many ways to do math. The sooner the teachers can come to appreciate this and provide younger students with multiple ways to solve a problem, the sooner students will be able to take ownership of their own math and excel in it. Additionally, when teachers provide students multiple ways to solve math, they empower the students with multiple tools that they can use for other problems. So, what about you? Do you find yourself stuck with math, trying to solve it in a way that has always been taught to you? Here's my challenge. The next time you find yourself stumped with math, work through it backwards, sideways, or some other way that you have never tried before. For example, let's say you have a front yard that you want to install with sod. It's a rectangular shaped yard and you need to figure out how much sod you need. Your yard is 100 feet by 50 feet, so it's a 5,000 square foot yard. Sod at Home Depot cost 62 cents per square feet, and your budget for sod caps out at 2,500. Obviously, you won't have enough sod to cover your yard, and so you are prepared to plant flowers in the area filled with dirt. How much sod will cover your yard, and how will you landscape it? And the worst part, you think you can't do the math. How do you solve this puzzle? If you are the kind of person who buys what you can afford and then lays it out to see how much you have, you could do that. If you are the kind of person who wants an idea of how much you will get, you could make an educated guess and then eyeball where you might lay the sod. If you like drawing, you can get grid paper and draw it out, letting each grid represent a square foot. If you need to plan it out based on how many flowers you have to plant, you could determine where the flowers will go and then figure out how much sod you need around the flower garden. Or you could check the numbers with math. There is no one way to do math. There is no one way to do science. As Richard Feynman once said, we must remove the rigidity of thought. We must leave freedom for the mind to wander about in trying to solve problems. The successful user of mathematics is practically an inventor of new ways of obtaining answers in given situations. So to recap misconception number 4, there is no one way to do math. Math can be creative, and there are multiple ways to solve it. Though math is about the destination, it's also about the adventure. Finally, misconception number 5. One of my favorite math topics that I love to dispel is this belief that men are better at math than women are. This concept is so incredibly untrue, and it is created out of educators' assumptions and their exposure to this belief through media and stereotyping. According to Stanford's sociology professor, Shelley Carroll, boys do not attempt math at a higher rate than girls because they are mathematically better. They do so because they think they are better. Again, this is all about mindset and self-confidence. For myself, I noticed that as I progressed in the more challenging math and science courses in college, the more that men began to outnumber me in those courses. By the time I was close to completing my math degree, I found that I was one of 2 women in a class of 7 men. I was just one of 2 because many of my female peers dropped out of the more challenging courses. Some women were victims of discrimination, others were marginalized and dismissed by their male professors. Then there were those women who were overwhelmed by the pressure to excel with high grades. If they did not receive high scores in their math and science courses, their confidence fell drastically. These women were holding an emotional attachment to their grades, whereas some of my male peers were not emotionally attached to the outcome. They recognized where they failed on their tests and attempted to self-correct with every following test. Dr. Jessica Cantlin is a professor of developmental neuroscience at Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh. She and her team did a study using functional magnetic resonance imaging on children between the ages of 3 and 10 while the children were watching educational videos and doing math problems. Cantlin's findings? She and her team found no gender differences in brain patterns in the regions of the brain. So if women are equally capable at math, Why are there more men in STEM-based fields than women? One reason is the early conditioning. Studies show that in kindergarten through high school, educators spent more time helping the boys with their problems and gave more praise to boys for their results. And they encouraged them to ask questions more than the girls. Society, culture, and stereotyping are other reasons why women begin to drop off of the STEM map. Since the entertainment industry's inception, more movies, shows, and advertisements show white men as scientists and doctors. It is not just about gender stereotyping, it's about race stereotyping. The stereotyping leads to creating self-doubt among marginalized students. These stereotypes carry over into our society and our educators. There are numerous stories of women being told that they do not belong in their math or science courses. I consider myself really lucky that I never experienced that. However, it happens, and it affects the self-confidence of the student. So, to recap, misconception number 5. Boys and men are not superior at math. Math and science are not gender-specific subjects. Girls and women are as smart and capable at math and science as their male peers. They can achieve a level of academics and accomplishments as much as any other man. Unfortunately, our communities, educational systems, and society need to recognize this and make significant changes. Through making these changes, we can allow the marginalized to stand on equal footing with boys and men. Many other misconceptions in mathematics, unfortunately, hold so many people back. Moreover, because these distorted beliefs have become common, people begin to take these notions for truths. These beliefs are damaging and need to be removed. Math and science deserve better. Math is a beautiful world of discovery. Unfortunately, these fallacies have kept so many people from experiencing the joy of math. Once we destroy these unfounded opinions and embrace the extraordinary world of math, we will be able to grow our math communities and obtain significant innovations. The world of math is a wonderful place. If you are intrigued, this is my invitation to you to this world of discovery. Even if it is just to learn how to figure out how to calculate a tip or calculate the amount of paint to buy for a room or even do your taxes, you got this. You are a math person. Go with it and see what kind of new world awaits your hidden genius. If you are interested in seeing the resources that I referenced for this podcast, and if you are interested in seeing a picture of my dog, please come visit me at mathsciencehistory.com. And while you are there, please feel free to click on that coffee button and buy me a cup of coffee, because every cup of coffee that you buy helps to fund this podcast. Until next time, carpe diem.